On the bench with Boak and Miss Rita sat Julia Lavania, who had two children in the program, the boy as one of the shepherds, and the girl as Mary, mother of Jesus. James, her husband, was not there. A short, big-headed mulatto with curly black hair and gray eyes, he had told me once that he had better things to do than go to a coon gathering. But Julia was there, and I knew that she had brought pecan and coconut pralines, just as she did every year. The Freemans had come in, too. Joe Freeman sat far in the back, but his wife, Harriet, and her mother, Aunt Agnes, and several of the children were up front, directly behind Miss Rita, Boak, and Julia Lavania. The Coles, Irene's people, sat behind them, Norman and his wife, Sarah, Sarah's mother, Lelia Wells, Sarah's sister, Esther, and Esther's boyfriend, Henry, and two or three children. Sarah usually brought crackling and baked sweet potatoes to the Christmas program. On the other side of the aisle, in the front row, and still wearing their overcoats because they were far from the heater, sat my aunt and Miss Emma, Miss Eloise Bowie, and Inez. Behind them were Farrell Giroux and his little wife, Ophelia. Ophelia was a delicate mulatto woman whose sisters came to the plantation every Sunday morning to take her to the Catholic Church in Bayonne. She would return late in the evening, and we would hardly see her again until the next Sunday, when she would climb into the back of the car to go to Mass. I supposed it was her husband, Farrell, who got her out tonight, because she had never come before. Behind them sat most of the Martin family, about 10 of them. Most, but not all. The father Herbert was not there, and neither was the idiot boy, Jesse, or the pregnant daughter, Vera, or the old grandmother. But Viola, the mother, was there, along with 8 or 9 of her children. Two others were in the choir behind the curtain. The Williamses were there, 4 of them. 3 Ruffins, mother, son, and daughter, were there. The Griffins, Harry and Lena, with their 2 grown-up unmarried daughters, Alberta and Luberta, were there. So the church was nearly full, and it was only 6:45. The bad weather had not kept them away, but probably had brought them out tonight. Since they could not work in the field or in their gardens, they had no reason to stay at home, claiming to be tired. At 7 o'clock, I parted the curtains and stepped out to face the audience. I told them how happy the children and I were to see them all here tonight, and that I knew they would enjoy the program because their children had worked so hard the past weeks to make it a success. I invited Reverend Ambrose, who sat in one of the side pews, to lead us in prayer. He stood and asked all to stand and bow their heads. The Lord's Prayer was first. Then he thanked God for letting us see a brand new day and for allowing us to gather together in his house in such inclement weather. The minister was a small man and seemed timid, but he did possess a strong, demanding voice when he prayed. He asked God to go with all the sick and afflicted, both at home and in the hospitals across this land. He asked God to visit the jail cells all over the land, and especially in Bayonne, and to go with the guilty and the innocent. He asked God to go with all those here tonight who did not know him in the pardon of their sins and thought they did not need him, no matter how educated a man was. He meant me, though he didn't call my name. He, too, was locked in a cold, dark cell of ignorance if he did not know God in the pardon of his sins. He closed by beseeching God to look down upon this humble little church and bless this gathering. The people responded with amen and sat back down. My aunt said amen louder than anyone, and she was looking directly at me. I went behind the curtain, and taking one of the middle sheets, while a student did the same on the other side, pulled the curtain back to reveal the stage. The choir of 12 boys and girls moved down below the altar to sing Silent Night. Irene Cole directed them. I stood behind the gathered curtain on the right, so that I could watch both the choir and the audience. The children had worked hard, and they sang beautifully, and this, too, was due to the bad weather. At any other time, they would have had to go home to work in the field or around the house. But since the weather had been so inclement, to use one of Reverend Ambrose's words, they had had more time for practice. The audience appreciated the singing. Even those who did not respond with amen, amen, gave the choir their closest attention. So did Boak. Once he raised his hand to point, a sign to show how affected he was by the singing, but Miss Rita took the hand gently and brought it to his knee. She kept her hand on his, not pressing it, but comforting him.